Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. My guest for today is Christine Carlson. Christine Carlson captivated readers with her first three bestsellers, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff in Love, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Women, and An Hour to Live, An Hour to Love. Expanding on the phenomenal success of her late husband, Dr. Richard Carlson's work, the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, Christine is continuing to share the timeless wisdom of the Don't Sweat philosophy in a celebration of mothers everywhere with her latest book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms. Christine has served as the spokesperson for the American Heart Association Go Red for Women campaign in 2012 and the Global Leadership Council for Challenge Day. Christine is an inspirational keynote speaker, retreat leader, transformational life coach, and ordained priestess. She is currently launching a 12-week What Now mentorship program that includes membership into the Don't Sweat Sisterhood. You can find invitations for these programs at her website at www.christinecarlson.com. That's KristineCarlson.com. Welcome, Christine.
Hello, Margot. It's so nice to be with you today.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you on my show and so thankful for you and Richard and your books. And oh my gosh, you know, it was such a blessing for my friend Lorraine Miller. She's a treasured friend of mine, to give me one of Richard's page-a-day calendars in around 1998. And it was that calendar that inspired me to buy his Don't Sweat the Small Stuff book. And oh my gosh, I am so glad she inspired me to buy his books. And then his books inspired me to buy yours. You know, so that's,
aw, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. They just have been such a great thing in my life. And I remember when we were in Hawaii in 1999, it was the first time we took our son to Hawaii, and I love books so much that I'm always going into bookstores while we're on trips and getting books. And during that trip, I got Richard's book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff with the Family, with Your Family. And I mean, that was like the perfect one to
perfect
get.
Perfect timing.
With it. Yeah, with the three of us on this trip to Hawaii together, you know, and there's so many things that are small things that, you know, you can let bother you if you want to during vacations as well as during real life. And so I was reading that book during that vacation, and I remember reading, we only have one child, Xander, and he's 24 now. He's going to be 25 on New Year's Day, and so he was 9 years old at the time, and I remember reading the chapter that said that if you have more than one child, you have to make peace with the fact that there's going to be sibling rivalry. And I remember thinking at the time, Christine, oh my gosh, that's something I'm never going to have to deal with Xander, because he's the only one that we have, you know. And
not unless you have a dog.
Yeah,
sometimes dogs and children can have sibling rivalry too.
well, that's interesting to know. But you know, we live in a condominium, so we aren't able to have dogs here. We're not allowed to. So we do have a cat now, though. We have a cat named
Xander. Yeah, cats.
Xander
cats are just so independent. They don't do any of that stuff. So.
Oh, I know. And the way we got Bender was kind of a really interesting bunch of coincidences. He actually came from our son, Xander, because Xander's friend Eileen found Bender when he was just a tiny, tiny little kitten back in the end of October of 2010. And we happened to be going down to Southern California to visit Xander while he was going to college down there at Chapman University, and fell in love with Bender, and it turned out that they couldn't keep Bender because of the fact that the landlord didn't want to let them, and so he came home with us, and he's been with us ever since. And it's interesting having a cat
yeah.
in the house. You know, you're right. He's very independent, but he is loving too, and he's quite a character.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Sounds like it.
One of the things that he does that I love is he reminds me to be in the present moment. And that's one of the things that are the principles in the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series, right? And you can be happy no matter what, is being in the present moment.
Yeah, there's five principles that Richard wrote about in You Can Be Happy No Matter What. And those principles are thoughts, moods, feelings, realizing separate realities, that we all live in separate realities, and present moment living. And yeah, being present is, I think, you know, Richard really, Oprah actually said that Richard was the first one to really, really chur about presence and what that really means to your life. And, you know, it's something that it's a lifetime practice. You know, it's not like one day you wake up and you just say, I'm going to be more present. You know, it's like it's every moment is it's like an awareness, a consciousness of bringing, you know, who you are to every moment and being aware of being present every moment too. But, you know, that is in and of itself. If you didn't do anything else for a spiritual path, that would be enough.
It's so true. And to be in the present moment, you're right. You constantly need to remind yourself, at least I do, to be in the present moment, because, you know, one minute you're thinking about something that happened a little while ago, and then next you're thinking about what's going to happen next. And so constantly bringing yourself back to that.
Yeah, and it's not a thinking thing. It's an attention thing. It's a mindfulness that is really all about placing your attention in the now, in the present moment. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that is such a practice. It's why we meditate, or why we suggest meditation. It's because there isn't any perfect way to do it. It's definitely a practice. It's not something that human beings are, I don't think, natural at doing. We're natural at being really busy in our minds and thinking a lot and being distracted by life and by our ego and so forth. But the practice of bringing that attention back to where you are in your body, in your breath, is so powerful. And it's so powerful to your experience of life, because it slows life down, and in such a beautiful way, you know, in such a way that you really, you get the full magnitude of joy and everything in life when you're slow enough to experience it, when you slow down to that speed that can only happen in the present moment.
That is so true. And I remember seeing a saying somewhere that joy lives in the present moments. And it's so true. You know, when I remind myself to be in the present moment and just to look around me and to notice what's there, that's when I start feeling joy.
Yeah, I kind of liken it to sinking in. You know, like, I always feel like I'm sinking into the present moment.
Ooh, I like that.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I'm not like flying outside my body and flying here and flying there and being distracted by anything, and I'm just sort of sinking in into an awareness of it. And I love that. I mean, like, I would say that's happened, you know, it happens a few moments every day if I'm lucky, you know.
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
I would love to be in that space, you know, more and more and more. And more and more, you know, in my conversations and so forth, I find myself to be incredibly present. But, you know, when I'm in my car or just, I'm definitely in another world when I'm doing certain things, and it's just, that's part of my habit too. You know, I find it so fascinating, because life really is practiced, how we practice it, and it's just a series of habits that we have, you know, one right after another. And when you can start to break down some of your habits, and especially those ones that aren't serving you very well, I think that's when, you know, when you can really start to see some large dividends in your growth and just in how you're able to manage life with greater grace and ease. You know, it's really about being able to be aware of those things that you practice that don't serve you. And we all do them, you know. It's like we're all in the same human boat, you know. It's just that we have different habits that we practice.
That's true. That's so true. And to actually be in the moment and start paying attention to what you're thinking about and what your mood is and how you're feeling, you know, it's important.
Well,
so,
none of them are independent of each other. That's the thing. I mean, none of those things. And the one piece that's kind of missing in there is the body. You know, the body's all part of that, too. And
mm-hmm.
the body, to me, is part of the present moment living. You know, and your moods are affected by your body health, too. Your thoughts would be affected by your physical health. None of it is independent of one another. It's all interconnected. And our health, you know, our mental and physical health is all interconnected to our spiritual health and well-being too. So you can't affect one without affecting any of the others.
In a good way or a bad way, right?
In a good way or a bad way, absolutely. In a good way or a bad way. I mean, in the teachings of You Can Be Happy No Matter What, Richard talks about how our moods and our thoughts are actually become like a weather vane. You know, we can use our moods and how we're feeling to bring our awareness back to our thoughts and to understand that all that's really happened when we're in a low mood is potentially we don't feel well physically, and potentially we haven't been thinking very high thoughts. We're on a train of thoughts, so to speak. I love the analogy of a train because it's just so perfect for
mm-hmm.
train of thought, you know, that...
Yeah,
that
that's true.
You look at a train and you look at all the different cars that are connected together. Our thoughts are no different than that, and they take us on a ride somewhere, you know, and if
mm-hmm.
you're not... If your mind isn't trained and your brain isn't trained... to become aware of your thinking, then you could be going on some trip you really don't want to go on.
That's so true. And I was just thinking as you were saying that, it almost seems like it would be like being on a train that didn't have the conductor. Or is it the conductor or the engine? Who is it?
It's the conductor.
The one that drives the train, whatever.
Exactly.
They're calling.
It's like a runaway train without a conductor. And when you're able to bring your thoughts into your awareness and begin to be the witness of them and see your thoughts, like they're like dominoes that connect in a row, then you are conducting your mind. Then your mind is better trained than somebody who has no recognition that they are a thinking creature, that their thoughts are leading them to these, you know, lower places that they're feeling.
That's so true. And, you know, the other thing is that each one of the thoughts that we think kind of tends to attract more thoughts that are like it. And so if we start thinking thoughts that are, oh my gosh, this isn't going to work out, or I wish that would happen, or I wish I didn't do that, or I wish, you know, whatever, you can start, you're right, in this whole train ride of thoughts that take you where you don't want to go.
Well, and I always think that that's the ego doing that. You know, like when you get those, I wish I would have, could have, should have thoughts,
mm-hmm.
it's usually your ego kind of bringing your self-critic, your inner critic, your doubter in play. And those are the ones, those are the thoughts too. Once you become aware of them, you know, just dismiss them. I mean, they're not really real. You're just sort of making them up, you know. And regret isn't really real either. You know, it's like you can't really take back something of your past. You can learn from your past
mm-hmm.
and step forward into your future. But there really isn't any such thing as having regret. It's just something the ego does, you know, to keep us separate and to keep us keep our essence at bay, you know. And I think once you're aware of that, you become super aware of that, then it becomes easier for you to move through self-doubt and move through those kinds of more negative self-talk. Things that we can get into that really hold us back in our lives.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I was noticing when I was looking through the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff books that I have, which I was telling you earlier, I have a lot of them. I think I might have almost all of them. I was looking through them, and I just love the format, how they're the really short like essays about how to don't sweat the small stuff for your family, for moms, for in love, you know, all of the different ones that you have. And for moms, I think that's really, you know, I wish I would have had that one a lot earlier. I really do, you know, because
being a mom, there's so many things
you can sweat.
Yeah, when I sat down to write that book, I really wrote the book I would have loved to have had. You know, like, I would have loved to have had a book like a manual that just gives you all the strategies that you have to call people that they don't have a clue, like, what, you know, should be the strategy. You know, like, they don't have, it's like all the strategies that you just have all these questions because, you know, as conscious parents, we all want to do it right, you know, and so you're right. We are always sweating. I used to say during my book tour, which was a couple of years ago now, I used to say telling moms not to sweat the small stuff is a little bit like telling a rabbi not to sweat the Torah, you know. There's just like so much that we sweat and you know, and especially younger moms with younger children because there's just so much responsibility involved. But I had hoped with that book to sort of take the pressure off the shoulders of moms to have all the answers and give them sort of a manual to go to about strategy for parenting, strategy for just, you know, how to be in joy and be a mom. Because it's like being a caretaker for young children can really suck the life out of you sometimes. And I watch my own daughter go through this when, you know, when I'm not there and she doesn't have help and her husband's got more than a full-time job. You know, she's with the kids all the time, and three kids under the age of five is, you know, in a newborn, that's just a whole lot to take care of.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the youngest one, was. I saw pictures on Facebook a while back, so the youngest one's a baby.
Yeah, she's only 5 months old now. So
yeah, that really is a lot. So she,
that's a lot. Three kids.
And that book's going to be a good one for her to keep with her all the time. Yeah,
she does the social media for my mom's page, my I'm a Don't Sweat mom's page on Facebook, and it's hysterical because I sometimes have to call her up and say, hey, this is I'm a Don't Sweat mom, not I'm a Sweat It mom.
Well, you know, for me, actually, one of the times when I think I could have really used it, too, is when our son left for college, too, you know. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Because I loved having him here so much, and it was so much fun having him grow up here that, you know, the three of us were like this fun-loving tripod. And so when he left to go to college, there was this big hole in our lives, you know, and it was really hard. It was a challenge for me and for my husband, Dudley, to not lay guilt trips on him. You know, I wanted to be really good about that, the way my mom was for me, about letting him go off and do what he felt called to do, what his heart wanted to do, and be where that called him, which was Southern California, and he's still down there. And that was really a challenge, too. So I think that,
yeah,
you know, that book is
a very challenging time for women and couples, you know, that because your focus is just so much about the kids for all those years, and then suddenly, you know, suddenly they're consuming your focus, and you have to sort of, wow, you know, really, there's a lot of light to shine on your life at that point. And, you know, I remember I sat on a airplane a couple of years back with a woman, and she was facing that, and she had given up her career, you know, like 15 years prior, and her kids were both going off to college. And I just remember looking at the panic in her face, you know, seeing and feeling the panic in her eyes, and just like her, really, you could tell she was just stunned by the idea that she had all this time, and she really didn't have any idea where she wanted to go with that and what she wanted to pursue. And that's sort of ignited my work right now, you know, is sort of finding those women for this mentorship program that I'm launching, is those women that feel that way, that they have so much more life to live, but they don't really know what direction they want to move in. And their sort of options are so many that they're just sort of incapacitated.
I know. I know what you mean. I mean, there are so many possibilities of things that you can do out there. And then, of course, there's all the people that tell you what they should on you and say, oh, well, you should do this and you should do that. And so I think having someone that's a coach or in a mentorship program like that is so wonderful because it can help you actually get in touch with your inner being and what really would help you feel alive again.
Yeah, I think it's a confidence thing, too. It's that, you know, what I'm doing is putting together more of a personal growth program that really allows these women to go within and really evaluate themselves with a whole different set of eyes than they've ever evaluated themselves before. And, you know, that's, I think, what it takes to discover what your life purpose is and to live. You know, I'm sure you feel this way, Margo, because just we haven't met in person, but I can just sense that, you know, mm-hmm. you've got so much energy, so much vitality, so much life, and mm-hmm. and you're healthy, and, you know, and I am too, and I'm 51, and I feel like, wow, I'm sort of at a real prime time in my life, like not a mm-hmm. downturn at all. I feel like I'm on an upturn, you know, so...
Yeah.
I feel like there's got to be a lot of women like that that feel that way, but they're just sort of, I kind of don't think it's a lot different than our kids that are getting out of college that sort of look blank-eyed and say, I don't know what I want to do with my life, you know, right now. Like they have so much more time ahead of them, and they've got mm-hmm. all the time in the world to sort of, you know, what we did, just sort of go in different directions, explore, And we have that sense at our age that, you know, we want to know because, you know, we don't have the luxury of, you know, an extra 20 years. We just want to be in tune to what we want to do and find a lot of joy in our lives. I mean, I know you said it earlier before the call, before our show started, but that's like really a buzzword and a keyword for, you know, women that and men that are entering into this midlife inquiry time, you know, what brings you joy?
Right.
It's perfect for you, Margo.
I know. Well, you know, Joy
Margo
is actually
Joy Nader.
Joy is my chosen middle name. With my birthday being on Christmas, it just seemed perfect. But also, Susan Jeffers had originally said to name your lower self. And I decided I'd name both my higher and lower self. So I named my higher self Joy. And I've been going by Margo Joy Denator for years now, so it just feels like it's the right one. But, oh, living your joy. And, you know, before I forget to mention it, I'm going to be taking the next 2 weeks off for the holidays, and I'll be back on January 7th. And my guest for January 7th is going to be Elizabeth Hamilton. And she's the author of an inspiring book called Percolate. And she's also the host of another blog talk radio show called Best Ever You. And I'll be posting the links for the show on Facebook and Twitter. And people can also sign up for my emails and find out about that. But, you know, I'd also like to hear about living the big stuff, Christine.
Yeah, well, we just talked about it, really, because one of the things that I think living the big stuff is there's two ways you can look at that. You know, you can look at it like, we have, you know, big life lessons that we learn, and that's certainly living the big stuff. And then we have big life experiences and big joy, you know. And I like to say the reason why we don't want to sweat the small stuff is we don't want the small stuff to take away from our big joy, you know, that if you're focused on the little things that are going wrong with your life or you get stuck in that total victim mentality of only seeing the problems, then you're just missing, you know, you're missing the greater experience of life. And I'm one that knows based on, you know, I lost Richard. We haven't talked about that, but I lost him in 2006, of December of 2006, and it was a very sudden loss. He wasn't ill. He didn't have, you know, there wasn't any warning. He had a blood clot on a flight, a pulmonary embolism, and he died instantly. And, you know, it literally was like having this, you know, vital man in your life, and then suddenly he was just gone. And But in that loss and in that process of grief and recovering from grief, what I really understand well is that we go through, every single day, we go through all of the emotional feelings that, you know, that people have. And even amidst deep sorrow, there's joy that's present. And, you know, there might be some people that might disagree with me, but when you're, that's the beauty of really, truly present moment living is that it's all there. It's all present. And it doesn't mean that if you're present moment living, you don't presently experience grief. You do. You know, you do experience grief, but there's a way in which that living very presently increases your ability to access joy no matter what you're going through in your life.
That's so true. And like we had talked about earlier, too, about my mom made her transition also in 2006 in October. And the thing that I was so thankful to have learned is that before that happened is that the only way I could feel her with me is when I was in my present moments and appreciating life and looking at what was right and feeling good and enjoying my life. And so, you know, it really helped me, helped remind me that the more I could do that, the more I could feel her with me. And I think that that has been so helpful to me. And again, it's about being in the present moment.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, where I access Richard, it's very interesting. I access him through just this deep gratitude and love that I feel for him and from him, and that I felt in life. You know, there's this way in which you just never lose that. That it, when you've such a deep connection, such a soul connection with your mother, with your dear friend, with your spouse. You know, when they're gone, there's just this like unbelievable continuation that happens through that love, especially when, you know, I made this post pretty recently on Facebook about anger, especially when you're not, you know, you can really cut that off if you're feeling angry and unforgiving or something. And that's definitely, there's moments of that in grief sometimes. But when you get past that and you can access that love transcends all the boundaries of time and space, and it transcends human form. And it really does live on in for eternity. And I think for those of us that have been blessed enough to be able to feel the presence of that love in life, we then can translate that into lacking a fear of death. You know, that for me, knowing that Richard continues on, knowing that, you know, he's not in a body, but that he continues on, it has dispelled all my fear about death. And I think when you start to not be afraid to die and be afraid of death, then you really start to live. And I think that really is a lot what living the big stuff is all about, is really embracing life with just a gusto, a sense of adventure, looking at everything. Like my friend Karen Salmonson says it beautifully. She says, she's really a wordsmith. She calls it a blessin'. There's a blessing in the lesson, and you know that there's
like
a lot
that.
Isn't that beautiful? A lot of stuff comes around for all of us. You know, we have losses. You know, we have financial hardships. Sometimes we have difficulty raising our teens. There's all sorts of things, but if you can start to really look for the blessing and the lesson in all things, then that really that dispels a lot of the negativity of being afraid that these things are going to happen, you know, that you're kind of aware that if it happens, you're going to figure it out. You're going to be able to go through it, and there's going to be, you know, something, some gift along the way.
Yeah, that's so true. Wow, we're almost out of time, Christine. I really want to have you on the show again so that we can talk more about your work and what you're doing and living the big stuff. And as we get ready to end the show, though, I want to ask all the people listening, what music do you hear calling you? What do you feel inspired to do? What gives you joy? Are you willing to let go of your limits and let yourself live your music? I hope each of you listening will do your best to love yourself, love the people and animals in your life, live your music, and enjoy your time on this beautiful planet we call Earth. And also, I know you'll join me, Christine, in wishing everyone happy holidays.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, happy
Everything,
Hanukkah and happy
Kwanzaa. All of it, the winter solstice is coming.
Yes, all of the above. Yes. So thank you so much, Christine, for taking the time
thank you,
Margo. To be on
it's
my
been
show.
A pleasure. Been a joy.
Thank you. Bye for now, everyone. I'll
Bye
talk
now.
To you soon. Bye.